Good morning, yes. My name's Stephen Hayes. I am the project manager at the Archaeology Computing Lab at Sydney University. And I have been working for the last 6 months with Tom Honeyman and Kim Jackson, who's sitting in the back there, on a software application called Field Helper, which I'm hopefully going to display to you. But first I'd like to talk about the background of the project briefly and go through some concepts that underpin the work we've done. So firstly, the development team, Kim Jackson. Kim's done most of the Java programming on the application. Tom Honeyman, he's brought a strong understanding of the XML space along to the project. Certainly a good understanding of mods METS, which is the target format that we're looking for. Anyway, more about that later. And myself. Now, I'm fairly new to the university. Ian Johnson, my employer, describes me as a commercial refugee, and I've been working at the university for about 7 or 8 months now, and this was basically the first project that I've done as an employee here. So I'll try and get that mouse out of the way. And I've enjoyed it immensely. It's been very stimulating, and I've met some very interesting people. So let's move on with it. What is FIDUS? The FIDUS project is a project to assist the workflow of researchers who collect digital data during fieldwork. One of my other hats that I wear is as a field assistant. I have an association with a gentleman who's studying reef bathymetry on the south coast. So having a tool to assist collating the digital data that we gather is something that we've both been looking for some time. The way that FIDAS is structured is it's analysing field methodologies, more about that later, and providing tools and resources to support the collection and long-term sustainability of data and metadata created in the field. Now, Field Helper basically is one of these tools, probably the only one at the moment, but I'm sure that if FIDAS continues, there'll be more interesting tools in the future. Project history. We had a fairly late start this year, actually. I was only employed in February, so our first design meetings, or at least the ones I was involved with, commenced in February and March. I actually described this slide earlier as my excuse slide, because this is basically why we haven't got as far as producing a beta application. I'm going to show you an alpha application today. Analysis and design work. April to July, we spent a lot of time discussing how this system should work and be structured. As with all good software implementations, we didn't start coding until quite late in the process. So the application you're seeing today first started being coded in August. And the first alpha release in November, in fact, actually a couple of days ago. So the challenge is to build a small and reliable cross-platform metadata enrichment tool. It must be easy to install, learn and use. And this is, I suppose, the link into the last presentation. It should encourage non-XML literate field workers to create rich metadata and submit this to digital archives. I spent a lot of time working with XML in the past, both in an informed and uninformed way, hopefully in the recent years I've learned more about XML, but I've always been very interested in XML, and it is a very complex area and very difficult to manipulate and manage the various different concepts that you're dealing with in that space if you don't come from a programming background. And in fact, in my experience, a lot of programmers don't actually really grasp XML. Certainly XSLT is a very non-standard type of language, if it can be called that. So basically the point here is you need to generate XML, you need to work with XML, but do you really need to understand it? And of course, this is the discussion we can probably have later. So basically, our concept is to reduce the whole idea down to a very simple process. You have a bunch of source objects, and you have a bunch of properties. Now, this is the domain that I expect field workers to be working in. In fact, under the hood, what's happening is expressed in XML, we've got an object with an ID tag. When we bring it over and drop it in this region C, under the hood again, it acquires a property with a name and value. and we can discuss details and how that's expressed into attributes or various different schemas. But essentially, the concept is that you have a bunch of objects and you put them in spaces which represent properties. And take the concept a little bit further, and the reason I show this slide is first because it's fancy and animated. Secondly, because it expresses the way we've broken up our application into various files. We have an underlying file which describes our entire project. It says who created it, the circumstances under which it was created, and that project file contains a number of sub-XML files representing specific items. So each of those items may describe maybe an image, maybe a recording, whatever. They're all expressions of digital items in XML. The properties file, which we also keep under the hood, actually describes specific properties, and I'll go on a little bit later to give you some examples of what those properties are. So as you see, these particular items refer to this property, and if we carry on, those particular items refer to that one. Notice, of course, here that item is actually in both of them. A little bit difficult to display it in this particular format. And there's a third set of items. Okay. So, here is the alpha version of Field Helper. Thanks for the shot. Okay, I'm just going to move over to the live application. And again, bear in mind this is alpha software, should work very nicely. But I'm going to open an existing project, and I'll go to Linda's fieldwork. My computer's not fully protected. Okay, let me just briefly put the mouse away and go and describe what's going on here. Basically, at the top, we have a timeline of the project. You can see that Linda collected a number of files in early September. And then what she did is she waited for a while and created a number of other files in the same directory in late November. I know for a fact that these are analysis files, which she generated from the original files, but that timeline gives you an idea of the scope of the project she's working on. The region here, this wonderful stripy region, is a week. We obviously need to do a little bit of work on how those things are displayed at the moment, because it makes a little bit more sense if you show it in maybe 1 or 2 days. So this is basically a list of files which occur on a particular day. At the moment we're looking at September the 9th and the 10th. I can move that around by pulling this little slider around across our bar graph, and we'll move on to different files. Now, on the right-hand side, these are our properties. I like to think of this as sorting trays. Sorry. I like to think of these as sorting trays. Just one sorting tray at the moment, recordist. So we've set up names for everybody who's actually recorded files in this particular project. And this particular one doesn't have an owner at the moment, so let's just pull it over so that was recorded by Isabel. I can quickly look now to see if I view the metadata for Isabel. The recordist, the singer. You see recordist Isabel is up there at the moment. Now, what you're seeing here at the moment in the pop-up window is a nicely formatted XML file, which is basically a representation of the underlying object that we've just tagged. So at any time we can open it up. I could open that file up at the moment, but it's a fairly large WAV file and we don't have speakers on at the moment. Now, if I wanted to just show only things that are recorded by Isabel, you can see they've been highlighted there, and perhaps I want to remove everything else. Then I can go over to another sorting tray. See there are a number here. And let's say that the place that one was recorded was Burrowy. Now, if I move it to somewhere else, you can see it's moved out of Burrowy and gone into this one. Linda, can you help me with the pronunciation? Okay. And apologies for anybody who knows exactly what these files refer to. I'm using them fairly fast and loose as demonstration projects at the moment. You can see as I actually moved over to a different language area, it actually moved out of this box and into that box. Just so happens that this particular sorting tray has got an exclusivity set up on it. So basically it can only be recorded in one place. But if we went over to language, for instance, you could possibly have a number of different languages in a recording. I'm not sure whether that is the case with your field work, Linda. It is the case with your field work. So actually it could be a number of different languages. So I'm just moving them in. So you can see this particular file here is now actually existing in a number of languages. What we've done at the top here is just give you a little graphical indication of how it actually lays out on the screen. And if, again, we want to view the metadata of that file, we can see it has a number of language tags in it. Now, let's say, for instance, I wanted to actually add a new property. And type in demo property. Forgive the simplicity of the text here, but and I'll allow repeats. Now, this is a fairly underdeveloped function at the moment, the mods target. It's clearly kind of diverges from the overall ethic of the system that you don't need to understand XML, and we're working on developing better ways of handling that at the moment. But essentially what we're saying here is that the property that we're setting up now, the target for all of that information goes into that particular path in your output mods file. So we're going to shove it in extension demo. Bit of a catch-all for...
Or you could leave it blank.
Or you could leave it blank. Okay, if I go to demo property, it sits nice and blank now. I can add a value and just call it A. Choose a colour. Add a value B. So, of course, ideally you should be able to do this, well, in my case, in the car on the way back from the surfing break that we've just surveyed. And ideally, because this is an application which runs, it's a fairly small application with no database attached to it, it's all done with XML. It should be fairly easy to run on most hardware. Okay, so I've quickly set up a set of categories, and I can very quickly tag those there. So that's in contrast to going in and creating another branch to your schema and what have you. So the idea is to make it very, very quick, very easy for you to quickly on the fly categorise your data and drag it in. Okay, and then there's a number of different output formats. I'm not going to go too much into these at the moment, partly because they're XSLT, and Leo Monis is in the audience and he knows far more about XSLT than I ever will, so I'm not going to embarrass myself until I've had a chat with him about how it should work properly. These output formats, if I click on one of these, it should actually create and compress all and combine all of the different underlying formats structures that we're using into a Metz mods package, which can be submitted to DSpace, Fedora, what have you. The idea also here, which I'll talk about in a minute, and I'll just move off of the software demonstration to go back to the slides, but the plan for next year, one of the plans, as I understand it, for APSR next year is to develop a library of transformations, obviously based on a standard interchange format. So if we can come to an agreement about how to express a Metz mods package, and every piece of software or every tool that we use either reads or writes in that format, then all the combined work of the APSR group, mostly Leo, will be to create XSLT transformations, can be imported and used in this structure. So if we have a nice HTML index structure, I can show you that one. It's a very, very basic transformation that just essentially reads through the XML and applies an HTML template. But basically that drop-down menu should give you access to the APSR transformation library, which will be loaded with whatever release of the software you're using. That's largely it, actually. People who'd like to have a hands-on go at the software can come to the workshop tomorrow, but I'm going to just click back to the presentation and carry on. Sorry, not that one. Okay. So, future plans. Maps. Obviously a big thing for us to put up. Ideally, next time you do a presentation, you won't have to say, I don't have a map. You'll just fire up your field worker project and there it will be. Maps, slightly different concept, but still largely the same. And in fact, one of the reasons we came to this idea in the first place was to conceive of the targets as regions on a map. It's more or less point and polygon queries in a GIS. Thankfully, we didn't go down the track of trying to make the whole thing a bizarre version of a GIS, but maps will have to come in the next phase. The difference really being here is that if we have a polygon here and we drag onto it, the position within the polygon that it's dragged into is important, obviously. In the previous examples, not. Basically, if it's in the box or it's out of the box, that's all you're interested in knowing. So there's a little bit of an extension, actually, so when we drag on, save that point. Very useful thing for people who don't have a GPS. However, for those who do have a GPS, I'll just mock this up a minute for a time with a fairly simple GPS tracker application I use. But we've done some work at the lab, at the ACL. Geotagger. Geotagger is the software, which essentially takes a set of files which have a time associated with them and a GPS track. And the logic is that if you have a GPS, which is basically a highly accurate clock, and it tells you where you were, and you've got a file that says when it was created, then you can clip it onto there. So if this is my track, I won't actually have to do the drag and tag here, because it will automatically happen, because this actually has a time on it, and that point there has an implied time on it. There's a little bit of sophistication in making sure that the time on the device you did the recording is actually set correctly. Otherwise, you know, you end up with a bit of a lag and you thought it was here and it's actually coming here. So we need a function to be able to just snap everything to the right time.
Photographing the GPS.
Pardon? Yes, photographing the GPS, which is a wonderful thing. The first shot you should have in your list of photographs is a shot of your GPS, because of course it codes your time. So if your camera clock says 10 past 3 and your GPS says 20 past 3, then you know all of your photographs in that line should be shifted 10 minutes. We haven't quite worked out how we can do an image analysis to actually read the time off the GPS. That would be a neat trick. Sessions, Tom's favourite. I might let Tom talk about that at some stage, either now or later on. Put it simply, it's a way of breaking up the time period of your field work into discrete packets, which are defined by the user.
Alright, I didn't realise
this. No, that's right.
Well. But yes, this has been my headspace for quite a while. So,
yeah.
This is a notion that might be handy to people working in linguistics, which is the notion that you actually group your files in the idea of a session. So if you're out there working on recordings for field work, usually they break down into the idea that you do a session of work working on a particular thing. And this is just a grouping principle for your files, which is basically to do with your export format in mods or HTML, which is that you naturally want to group files together as being related to a chunk of work. Now, there's an interesting problem, because it doesn't necessarily relate to the actual time of creation of the file. So you need to bring files, for instance, from the end of the timeline up there into this time period here. And the way that you do that is you associate the kind of files that would be created during a session as having an innate time. So your audio files would be a good example. The time that you're actually doing the recording was probably roughly the time that your session was actually occurring. So you have these session groupings created around the primary data, and then you drag your associated files into that session and have them aligned that way, basically.
But just to follow on, it's still basically the same principle. We're still dragging files into boxes. It's just how we represent those boxes in the underlying data. It's focused towards a slightly different way of handling. So we're working on the assumption, which is yet to be disproven, at least for me, that the basic approach and infrastructure we're using should be amenable to quite complex interpretations of this target pane, one of which is a favourite of mine, which is SVG. Now, this is just a cheat. This is a screenshot directly from one of the toolboxes in Visio. But basically, I use Visio a lot to draw diagrams of structures. And if you can express your complex data setup by drawing on a whiteboard, then you should be able to use a tool like Visio, which exports with it in SVG, to create one of these panes. So I could have some kind of family tree, for instance, and I could drag and drop onto the parts. So you know, that's very much in the future, because we haven't exactly worked out how to do that yet, but I've certainly had a few discussions about it. Future plans. Now, schema import. Now, having told you that this can be done on the fly, you can create categories on the fly, one of the great innovations that Tom came up with a few days ago is, given that we're actually exporting to mods, why not take the mod schema and import it and use all of the structures and the controlled vocabularies in mods to create a series of sorting trays. So we've done a little bit of work on that already, but ideally, one of the workflow processes we're going to suggest is that an expert within your team, or somebody who has a higher level of expertise or has nominated themselves to look after the XML handling in your particular team, can select, modify, make annotations to a schema, suck it in and create a base field helper structure, so that when you create a new project, most of your tabs are already set up. So
that's if you don't want to use one of the predefined schemas that we can give you as well.
Yes. Yeah.
So you don't want to be an XML expert.
That's right. So essentially, you should be able to use field helper with an existing schema, whatever form that takes. Dayview, high-density data, I haven't illustrated this particularly well at the moment. The application itself, application shows columns representing days. Certainly the thing that's missing at the moment is people who catering for people who collect a lot of data with automated devices straight up, you know, over a short period of time. So being able to play around with the calendar view of the data in such a way that you can narrow down to maybe even a few minutes or a couple of years is a modification that we'll be making. Little favourite of mine, text file transcripts, and I've termed that the granular document, which is basically something like this. To say, well, what we're dealing with in the right hand side is actually items. We somehow split our project out into items. Blank. That was supposed to be highlighted. Basically, that's a sentence that's highlighted. Doing some work in a parallel project on a book called Journey to Horseshoe Bend, which involves me tagging a lot of the data in that book for particular purposes. And what I really want to be able to do is have the text there and be able to create a number of boxes here and just say, well, that sentence there is that, and that sentence there is that, and that phrase there is that. So basically, that's what we're heading for. Okay, we are funded for next year. Is that common knowledge? and we are funded essentially to oversee, implement, test, document, demonstrate a scholarly workflow for fieldwork portfolios. Basically, using field helpers. So, the way I interpret that is essentially we would like to integrate a wizard, workflow wizard, into Field Helper. So when you open it up, at the moment it says create project, but what would be nice is if you open it up and it actually guides you through step by step with a best practice process of collecting fieldwork. And once it's over, it dumps you into the application, which is set up with your predefined schema from your local XML expert or whatever it is. And then once you finish coding, it'll continue the workflow to show you step-by-step how to submit that into DSpace or Fedora. Or make a web page. Or make a PDF. Or whatever it is you want to do with your newly categorized and organized data. So, a couple of things, vision things. This is long-term how I'd like to see Field Helper as a simple, powerful tool to encode high-quality metadata by domain experts, being all of you, with no presumed knowledge of XML. It's okay if you've got it, but you don't need it. Now, the measure for that would be the speed of installation and the time to taken to start to learn and start using. Ideally, I'd like to see a situation where you can go to the Field Helper website, download the latest build, install it, and have it up and running in 10, 15 minutes. Field Helper should be able to take full advantage of the APSR infrastructure in that area. I'm specifically referring to things like the transformation libraries, obviously to be compatible with whatever supported repositories APSR encompasses. Measured by continuing fun. If we keep getting invited back, obviously we're doing okay on that one. And it would be good to see Field Helper used and promoted by APSR partners. And the third part of the vision is to make it well-tuned for use in field conditions. A lot of the ideas behind Field Helper has been focused on using it on a laptop in the field. So if there are continual requests for new features from a large user base of field workers, then we're reasonably successful. Where to now? There's a presentation tomorrow, a hands-on workshop tomorrow for an hour. Hopefully there'll be lots of tea and bickies because it's not particularly difficult to learn to use it. And there's not many functions at the moment, so either we work really slowly or we don't spend an hour at it. We're interested in alpha testers, actually. So anybody who'd like to dive in and start playing around with it and giving us some feedback on how it should work as opposed to how we think it should work, we'd very much like to talk to you, take your email details, put it on our list, and start distributing the releases as they come out. And we will have a website with alpha test resources. I'm building it now. It should be ready in January. And I don't know whether I'm under or over time, but that's it.